And the more of that you give them, the more opportunity you're going to have the hard conversation with them. Because that hard conversation realistically is only hard if there's no relationship there. Like, just don't underestimate the impact you can have on somebody in a single encounter. You can change somebody's life.
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 247. My guest this fine evening is Michael Dozier. He is a proud husband, married for 15 years. He has two sons. One is 14, one is 19. He has 18 years on as a career firefighter with Horry County, where he is currently a captain. He is best known for his blog, The Company Officer. And that is the bulk of what our conversation is going to focus on this evening. He is an FDIC instructor. He has a master's degree, and we are going to enjoy diving down some rabbit holes. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome you to The Scrap for episode number 247, my friend, Michael Dozier.
Yeah, man, thank you. I appreciate it. Honestly, kind of humbling to get brought on. I've been listening to this thing for years now. I don't know if I've missed. I don't catch the live one too often, but I've got a long drive to work, and it's one of my main rotation podcasts, so I appreciate it.
I absolutely love hearing it, and I really do appreciate long drives to work, because that really does give this crap a lot of its audience. So is there anything I missed in the intro? Anything you would like to add?
No doubt. That was plenty.
Awesome, man. Audience, please get your questions primed and ready for Mike, Sam, and myself. Sam is scouring the YouTube comments looking for your questions, so post them so he can get them to me. And if you have questions on all things company, officer-related, culture, firehouse, running it, keeping the morale up, all those things, how to avoid, all the things that Michael loves to talk about, please, please, please post them. Now, we will talk about those beautiful sponsors, the OG sponsor of The Scrap, Kehoe's. You can check them out online at Kehoe's.com or follow them on Facebook. Affordable Drill Towers, home on a mission to bring you cost-effective and versatile training props like the Affordable Bailout Prop, which allows you to practice window bailouts, ladder bailouts, and ladder high point rescues. They make the Affordable Standpipe Prop, which you can roll into the classroom for standpipe theory, and then you can roll it into the parking lot where you can actually pump realistic flows and pressures. From one of the best, with more than 60 drill towers installed, the Affordable Drill Tower comes in several configurations and comes standard with a standpipe system. Choose from one or two sets of stairs integrated into your existing Connex boxes for multi-story access or freestanding on a slab. All models are NFPA 1402 compliant and gain you ISO credit. The only thing that you can't do on an Affordable Drill Tower is live fire training. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier Safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours with no switches, no batteries, which means being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions, all specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen, on scene, identifiersafety.com. And believe me, every time someone makes their rookie year on my shift, on my battalion, I buy an identifier safety thing to put on their face mask. It's a ritual. And I actually, because the brand we use at my department, Identifier Safety quit making them for a brief period of time, so I couldn't do it. And I thought no one would notice. And just recently, a few guys graduated, got the rookie year done, and I didn't give them their tags. And when I went to FDIC and talked to Matt there about Identifier Safety, he said, no, we're making them again. I'm like, really? Sweet. And I ordered them. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. It was pretty cool. So there we go. Beautiful sponsors are done. Now, one thing I want to talk about, if you look down here on the scrap, there is a QR code that I put there, okay? That QR code will take you to the federal regulations for OSHA, the two in, two out, the new, they are revisiting that standard and they are republishing that standard. And this is one of the most important things to talk about. That's why I wanted to talk about it right here at the top of the scrap. And it'll probably be for the next few scraps until the deadline passes, which, if I'm not mistaken, is June 21st. I'll double check that, but I believe it's June 21st, where you, the firefighters that are out there doing this job, can go and make a comment, an informed comment, to make a difference on what the new regulation will look like moving forward. This is one of the most important things in the fire service, and that is why that link is down there. Click it. It's not easy. It's not like you can go and just type a comment on your phone. It is a process. You need to put in who you are, your rank. You need to read and reference the material that you're actually talking about. Make your comment matter and make a difference for the next 20, 30, 40 years of the fire service. Man, it's so important. We're going to post links in the YouTube channel. Sam will post the links. You can scan that QR code. You can also click the link that Sam will post in the chat. And also, there's an article. The article was written by, I don't want to leave anybody out, Scott Thompson, Chris Thompson, Sean Duffy, Nick Ledeen, and Bill Carey. And it's a phenomenal article explaining all of the data from FSRI, UL, Firefighter Rescue Survey, Project Mayday, data, not drama, all of it. They reference everything to give you an informed look at why it matters. Okay. So go read the article, click the link. Don't be lazy. This is the biggest challenge. Firefighters will love to say, I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it next week. And then June 21st is going to come and go. All right. I'll quit beating up that horse and I'll get to the guest. Okay. Thank you, Michael, for letting me hijack your strap.
No problem.
All right. Let's get to it. Let's get right to it. Yeah, there we go, people. I'm going to read you a few of the articles, which mainly are, let's go, listening in, yo, LFG, watching from Trinity Fire Department from Michael Henderson. Spray 9 said, LFG, Ram Dodge 3500 said, let's go. There's the link for the article. Check it out. Austin Gabehart said, checking in for Springfield Township Fire, LFG. Yes, absolutely, coming at you. So let's start it off right. I'm going to kick it right into your wheelhouse and say firehouse culture and the company officer's impact. You can take it whatever direction you want, but it'll be a nice segue into you talking about what you are good at talking about.
Yeah. Man, I think that's probably what I'm most passionate about right now is culture in the firehouse. I think we got guys out there hitting home runs left and right on tactics and you know, truck work and engine work. And there's just, honestly, like kind of modern day legends out there that you know are going to be talked about decades from now about what they're teaching. You know, right now you can go take classes from them, you can read articles from them, you can chat with them on Facebook. You know, you can watch them do podcast, watch them do the scrap, and listen to them in podcasts and all that stuff. And you know, I think firehouse culture though is, and there's definitely some studs out there talking about it, but it's something that kind of gets neglected sometimes, and it's real easy to just look at, you know, on the fire ground performance to completely get a judgment of a fire department, and it's definitely a major piece of the puzzle that's got to be there. But I think, you know, life in the firehouse is something that we don't chat about a ton, and it impacts the fire ground way more than what we're probably willing to say, and impacts mental health a ton. I personally think more than bad calls in the fire ground, you know, ever will or ever has. So it's a big thing, I think, that's got to be hit on. And I personally believe that the company officer is where it all starts with culture and life in the firehouse. You know, you can get the rest of those pieces right, and if the company officer is not on board and not doing things the right way, it falls apart pretty quickly. Or, you know, your firemen that are doing things the right way, they're going to go find a boss that's about the same life they are, and they're not going to be on your crew very long or your department very long, especially when you're a smaller department and there's not, you know, two or three or 10 or 15 or 20 other firehouses they can jump to find what they're looking for. You're going to run into retention issues and everything else. And a lot of times I think our company officers around the country are left, you know, standing there looking in the mirror, blaming other people.
Sure.
Instead of taking responsibility for their part of life in the firehouse.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. And, like someone says right here, someone said this, Cody Brooks said it, the posts this guy puts up on Instagram are always fire. I love it. Talk about the posts you make, the inspirational posts, especially the one sentence type, you know, just hammer home the point posts you make.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure with a lot of social media, fire service pages and stuff, it realistically started early on as a place for me to vent and blow off steam. And, It kind of was a sort of therapy for me, I think, you know, because everybody's dealing with problems in their own fire departments. Everybody is, you know, nowhere is perfect. And it was a place where I could kind of put stuff out there. I started realizing that people liked it, or it was hitting home with them. I was constantly getting messages and things like that. As far as like the one line stuff, man, I'm a simple minded individual. I think, everybody, keep it simple, stupid. That's me to a T. I don't like things that are complicated. I like it cut and dry, to the point, direct, blunt. And not to say that I'm not worried about hurting feelings or anything like that, because I'm not going to take it that far. I do, and I think it's on the list to potentially talk about later. I mean, I do care what people think.
Right on.
I think it matters that people want to hear what you're saying, because if they don't want to hear what you're saying, then you don't have any influence.
Well, no, and if you there's definitely that rabbit hole or that trail you can go down that is just pissing everybody off and making noise and controversial and shock jock. And then you just become white noise.
Yeah. And I kind of went through that, probably a decade ago. I kind of went through that with some social media stuff, not a ton, nothing like this. Put some stuff out there, and I really legitimately didn't care what anybody thought. Like, that was in my mindset, was I don't care if this hurts their feelings.
Right.
I'm going to sleep just as good tonight as I did the night before I said it, and what I realized was that, And I'm not going to be completely negative about that mindset, because on some level, I don't think you should lose a ton of sleep over what people think. But if you're going to be in a fire department or any kind of organization and you want to influence the folks that are around you, if you think you're doing things the right way and you want people to do things the way that you're doing them, they're going to have to like you at some point, or at least not hate you. Because if they hate you, you could have all the answers. They're not going to listen. They're not going to hear them. All they're going to see is he's saying that we're pieces of crap. They're not going to see that you're wanting what's best for them. They're not going to see that you just want what's best for the organization or for citizens. All they're going to see is, hey, that Mike Dozier's an a-hole, and we don't like anything he says, because
he's super judgmental and he thinks his shit don't stink. Right.
Yeah. So that kind of switch kind of flipped for me. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I started realizing that if I was just a little bit nicer to people, and if I was a little bit, it was one of Jocko Willink's books. He talked about it, the art of being indirect. You're still trying to get the same point across you were trying to get across when you were being really direct and blunt and rude and just saying what you wanted to say, but you're giving them the info a little bit differently, and they're way more accepting of it. And then, like, your ultimate goal is to influence them. So it's a whole lot easier if they like you.
And it is that fine line, because there's that, my knife fans here, let me get them right. But there is that fine line of, I don't care what people think, and I'm going to say what's on my mind. And I have a message I want people to be able to absorb. And there is that dichotomy, even in your own head, of trying to say, how do I stay true to myself but also be effective? And it's tough. It's a tough way to try to be authentic.
Yeah.
And still, not just be spinning your wheels.
Yeah.
Was there a point for you where you went from the one extreme to the other? Was there a tipping point, or was it more of a accumulation?
I did 4 years as a training officer, and I was a younger guy, man. I was only like 26 or 27 years old when I went to training, which is honestly, I wasn't ready. I didn't need to be there, but I kind of had a passion for training, and I was a fire academy instructor, and I had the pieces that they stuck me in there. And I ran rookie schools for 4 years, and I realized probably three years in, man, it was close to the end of my tenure in training. I did 4 years that the rookies didn't like me, and on some level it was because I was tough on them, and it was necessary sometimes, but I was pretty abrasive, and I was very unapproachable. And it finally got to a point where enough of them, it wasn't a complaints thing. I didn't deal with HR. It wasn't anything like that. It was more enough of them were brave enough, after they got out of rookie school, kind of to tell me, they're like, yeah, like we feel like we couldn't bring problems to you. We couldn't talk to you. I don't know whose quote it is. I don't remember. There's a quote. There's basically, that if the moment that people are too afraid to bring their problems to you, you're useless to them. And when I realized that, I had to kind of soften the edges a little bit. I was still giving the same message. I was just giving it different. My message was the same, but I was delivering it a lot differently. And it played out a lot better for me as I went back out on the road as a station captain. I kind of adopted that. I'm not naturally a people person. I'm kind of an introvert.
Right on.
Like, I'm not going to talk to people. I'm not going to make a conversation with a stranger in the grocery store. They talk to me, I'll talk to them, but I'm not going to start the conversation. So it's not natural for me.
Right.
So I realized that I have to focus on, you know, being a little bit, I don't want to say being nicer, but like, you know, I had to focus on just talking to people and developing relationships.
I'm an introvert. I tell people this and people are like, yeah, shut up. But no, it's a weird thing because I'm an introvert that's a people person, if that makes sense. I love people, but I'm an introvert and interacting with them wears me out. And if you don't understand that, you don't understand it, especially extroverts just don't get it.
That's me to a T. I love people. It's probably my favorite thing about the firehouse, having people there, the camaraderie and brotherhood and all that. But I am also completely okay with being by myself and not talking to anybody.
Oh, I can sit in a crowded room and just sit by myself, first of all, and talk to no one, or need to get out of that room so I can go and be alone in some silence for a minute, have no stimulus. But 100%, brother, I love hearing that. Now, let me ask you this. I want to dig in a little bit. Being a young training officer, especially, because there's a lot of people that, for whatever reason, in their departments, big, small, everything in between, get thrust into position that they don't feel like they were ready for. Imposter syndrome runs rampant.
Yeah.
You know, and what's probably the one lesson you would want to share with them being a 26-year-old training officer? What's the lesson you would look with your hindsight looking backwards?
You don't know everything. You know, it's just that simple. I mean, you don't know everything. I think I was pretty confident. I had worked in some companies that had gone to some, you know, we don't go, we're not job town, but we go to fires. Probably enough fires to say we go to fires, but
right.
not a crazy amount. But I had worked with some companies that went to some fires. I volunteered for several years at my hometown department. And, you know, so I was running fires, you know, 350 days a year. Like, if I wasn't on vacation, I was going to fires if there was a fire anywhere around, and had kind of refined my craft a little bit. I think I had built up a decent reputation. I mean, you'd have to ask other people about that, but I think I had a decent, you know, reputation as a fireman. And then, you know, they put those bugles on and stuck me in, you know, in front of 25 recruits and said, "Hey, this guy knows you need to do everything he tells you to do." And I got a little cocky there for a little while. Not super. I mean, I don't think it didn't get me in trouble or anything, but I got a little bit cocky. And it really took me getting humbled, you know, when I realized that these rookies didn't want anything to do with me, essentially. And unfortunately, some of them are still in the department. And I do think my reputation is different in my department now, but there's still some folks that have been around, you know, that decade or so since I was in training that still see me as Captain Dozier that was in the training division. And it's not, I don't think I'm the same person. And routinely, you know, we'll have folks that come to my firehouse and they'll work. And they'll either say something to me afterwards, like after the shift, like, "Hey, it was different than I thought of you. You were different than I thought you were going to be." Or my guys will go out and work and they'll hear things about me. And they're like, he's a goofball. You know, he's joking and laughing and staying up late. And he never yells. And, but that's not the side of me that those rookies saw when they came in. And some of those folks are lieutenants and captains now and things like that. So, you know, reputation's a big deal, I think, that gets a lot of people write it off as this, like, I don't care what anybody thinks about me.
Right.
And there is that
balance of you got to, because, again, you don't want to base everything off what's everybody think, and I'm going to do what everybody wants. You know what I'm saying? You have to be authentic and true to yourself, but you also have to have a solid integrity of your reputation, you know, that takes into account the influence you have and the impact you have on others.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I always use the analogy of my wife, you know, because most firemen are fixers. We want to fix things.
Right on.
You know, she could come to me with a problem. I mean, to this day, she could come to me with a problem and I could have the right answer. But if she's pissed off at me because I didn't, you know, put the dishes up or I didn't wash clothes or, you know, I whatever. She's mad at me about something. She's not going to listen to what she's not going to listen to that answer that I have, even if it's the perfect answer. So I think it's no different in fire service. Like, we overcomplicate it, and there is probably something positive about saying that you don't care what other people think. I don't think you should let it change what your mission is. I don't think you should let it change what your why is, or
Your core values, your
by all means, you know, stand strong on those things, and don't let other people chip away at them. But if your goal is to impact others with those core values and with your mission in the fire service, it's going to go a lot easier if you have a good reputation.
Right. Flies and honey.
100%. It's going to go much easier if you have a good reputation.
You ready for your first question from the audience?
Cool.
Robbie Lyle is asking, how did you actively change your image to become more approachable, and how long did it take to fix your image among the recruits you taught? Great question, Robbie.
To be completely honest, I probably didn't fix it very well while I was out there. I think I kind of realized it in between some classes. So like, you know, the last class or two that I had out there, I think I had probably 8 or 9 recruit classes in the 4 years that I was out there. We hired a bunch, but we've grown tremendously in the past decade. And, they probably got a little different version of me than the first, you know, handful of classes did. And then that's just progressed even further, you know, so the folks that work in my firehouse today are getting a wildly different version of me than what I was 10 years ago. And most of it is based on the way I act around the firehouse. I don't think my core values on the fire ground have changed a ton. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I'm better. I'm sure I'm more comfortable in the role. You know, the more calls you run, the more fires you run, I'm more comfortable. But I don't think my core values have changed a ton on the fire ground. But my core values in the firehouse have changed tremendously. They're completely different than what I was as a fireman. As a fireman, I was there 100% selfish. You know, I wanted the nozzle. I wanted to do the search. I didn't care where, you know, even if we were fifth dude, I didn't want to play my part. I didn't want to play my role. I wanted the glory, the premier role. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I kind of want my young guys to want that. I want to build that. But as a captain, I've dialed that back a ton, and it's really more of a where do we fit in the grand scheme, the puzzle on the fire ground. And then in the firehouse, I think when I had kids was what really changed life for me. When I started realizing that life in my house and the way I take care of my family is not that much different than life in the firehouse and the way I take care of my crew. The core values, they should be the same. And I think if they're not the same, you're going to struggle. You're either going to struggle at the firehouse or you're going to struggle at home, one or the other. And I know you talk about that where the whole work life balance, you know, it shouldn't kind of almost doesn't exist.
Right. And in my mind, it's my opinion, but yes,
I agree. And I don't mean it from the, if you're looking at like the traditional definition of work life balance of just time. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you do have to devote time at home. But when your core values are aligned in the firehouse and in your house at home, that balance gets so much easier because you don't feel like you're acting and playing a role when you're in either one of those things. You know, so I don't feel like I'm acting like dad at home. It's just who I am. And then when I go to the firehouse, I'm not acting like Captain Dozier. That's just who I am. I'm just being who I am. And when your core values are in line there, and that means, you know, taking care of your people. Well, I can say that about my kids. I'm taking care of them. When I say I'm loving the people in my firehouse, wanting what's best for them.
Right.
That's true. Well, that's also true at home.
Right.
So when those core values are in line like that, it makes life so much easier.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I love how you clarified that work-life balance, the values of those balanced. Yeah. That's a beautiful way of putting it. And just to clarify, because I always say this, is there's no such thing as work-life balance. If you are struggling, I'll just say it real quick, and I'll leave it alone. But if you're struggling to figure out, how do I balance this passion I have for the fire service, and I wanted to, you know, how great this job is, and it's the greatest job on earth, without a doubt, the calling, man, without a doubt. If you're struggling with that, man, you're out of balance, plain and simple. That's my opinion only. There is no balance. Family comes first, period.
Yeah, 100%. When you start talking about balance, you're giving and taking from something.
Yeah. If you're struggling with it, you're out of whack. That's my opinion. My opinion only. It's not based on any scientific data, man. 100%. Just a goofy podcast host opinion. Yeah. 100. Volunteer time. You did volunteer time?
Yeah, I did. I did about 7 years in two different stints with Dolores Volunteer Fire Department, the hometown I'm from.
Shane Prince wants to know, how did your volunteer time influence your career?
Oh, that's my guy there, man. Probably one of my best friends. One of the best guys I've ever run with. We volunteered together and we worked on the job together a little bit. It completely changed the type of fireman I was. The department that I worked for, especially when I was a fireman, we didn't have a lot of manpower. We still don't have a ton of manpower. Like, anyway, you know, we're dealing with what everybody's dealing with in suburban-ish mm-hmm. type areas. Mm-hmm. So I got thrust into driving pretty early. You know, we don't even have engineer's positions even still. It's something we're fighting for right now. So I was driving a pumper a lot. So a lot of the first few fires that I went to early on in my career – as a career fireman, I was pumping. I wasn't getting to pull a handline. I wasn't getting to make a push. I wasn't getting to do searches a ton. I got to see the bigger picture. I got to talk on the radio. I got to be, you know, make decisions. I didn't have a captain right in my pocket telling me what to do.
Right.
But when I went on the volunteer side, we had these older guys that drove and played command and all that. And I never had, even after I was a captain in my career department, I never had to play the captain role on the volunteer side. So I got to make pushes. I got to do searches. I got to, get hot and dirty and feel heat and make decisions on the interior without having a boss with me. And I just got to be a fireman. And it kind of bridged some of that gap that I missed out a little bit on the career side because of just the nature of our job and our deployment model the way it is, right? You know, and especially the way it was right then. So we're running minimum two most of the time. When I was a fireman, so I didn't get to play fireman a whole lot. I was pumping. And then, you know, before you know it, you're acting up as a company officer and then right. You're in the seat. And, you know, so I got to play fireman on the volunteer side. So I'm the fireman I am right now 100% because of the volunteer side. And just the fact that I got to be a fireman because I didn't really get that opportunity a ton on the career side.
No, I love that answer, man. Great answer. Absolutely love it. Let's go to company level leadership, which is the company officer's wheelhouse, without a doubt. The good, the bad, and ugly of company officers.
Yeah, that's something I kind of stole. Well, I mean, obviously, it's a movie, you know. So I got a class I'm doing now on that, and I'm not going to really dive into that necessarily, but it's a concept I kind of stole out of the small unit leadership.
Okay.
The small
unit. Dandridge Malone?
Yep.
The okay.
Small unit leadership book is fantastic.
Great book. Unbelievably good book.
And that book and the mission, the men, and me, that book. And I kind of took some concepts out of both of them and kind of combined them and built this class off of it. And what I'm looking at is like a good company officer should be able to balance the mission and taking care of his crew. Like 99.9% of the time, realistically, you should be able to accomplish both of them. You should be able to do the mission, prepare for the mission, and also take care of your people and have good morale and all that stuff. When you step down to the bad side of company officers, I think you're looking at someone that gets either the mission right or they take care of their people, but they don't get both.
Mm.
So, you know, they're either their people are really happy. They're not transferring. Their morale's great, but they suck on the fire ground. Well, that's not okay. Well, the inverse of that being great on the fire ground, which is necessary, but then we go back to the firehouse and it's just complete chaos all the time. Toxic, people hate each other, they're not getting along, they're transferring, they're leaving the department, retention rate's down, morale's terrible.
Right.
Well, that's not good.
Right.
And then the ugly side of that is the folks that don't get either one of them right. And we see that from time to time. And a lot of times they bleed over. because I'm going to be honest, I don't know how my company would do if the next two or three fires we went to, we just sucked it up. Like, and what I mean sucked it up, like we just went and we just were terrible. It would bleed over into the firehouse, 100%.
Without a doubt, I agree.
One of the best things for morale is going to the fire ground and kicking tail.
Kicking, yeah.
That's like a, yeah. That's a shot straight, you know, main vein, like mainline morale boost. So that's that good, bad, and ugly. You know, that good one, which, like I said, 99.9% of the time, you should be able to accomplish the mission and take care of your people. And it, are there going to come times where you have to make a decision? Yeah. And that's what the company officers get paid to do, as far as I'm concerned. We get paid to make hard decisions when, you know, on short time with not just lives at stake, but livelihoods at stake. And mental health at stake, and relationships at stake, and trust at stake. And that is where we, I think, earn our money at. Mm. Whenever those decisions come up where we're saying, hey, you know, this is what's best for the citizens. This is the mission. This is what's best for the organization. And, oh, yeah, crew, like we're going to have to eat this one. And that's where that relationship comes into play. That's where that trust comes into play, because that's the perfect analogy there, where you can have the right answer. The right answer is almost always going to be the mission. Like there's your answer. It's the mission. But if you don't have that relationship in place, they're not going to eat that very easily. You know, they're going to just see that, hey, he's not taking care of us.
Right.
But if you've built that relationship and they know without a shadow of a doubt that you want what's best for them, and that you want them to be on board with the mission, and look, your mission should be their mission. And if you don't have that influence over them, they live with you every third day or fourth day or whatever your schedule is. They're living they're with you a ton.
Yeah.
Then there should be no doubt about what your mission is.
Yeah, you're not fooling anyone.
Yeah, 100%.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm telling you, firefighters have the best BS detectors in the world. We spend too much time together to not get it in. John Smith coming at you. He says, in 20 years, when the stories are told, what do you hope the legacy of Michael Dozier is in the fire service?
Oh, man. This is one of those weird ones where, because I've just sat here and said that, you know, talked about how important reputation is. I really don't care what somebody from Boise, Idaho thinks about me.
Nice.
I don't care what somebody that works at the FDNY thinks about me or from any other part of the country. I hope that my legacy is the impact I had on the people that lived in firehouses with me. That rode rigs with me, and that, you know, we're having those conversations at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning on the way back from some BS lift assist or something we've been to for the third or fourth time that day. Those impacts I've had on them, you know, I hope that they can look back one day and we'll talk about mentors and stuff later, you know, with the Rushmore question. But I hope they look back and they say, you know, hey, you know, I'm a better husband because I was with him. I'm a better father because I was with him. I'm a better lieutenant or captain because I was with him, a better leader because I was with him. But that's all I'm worried about. I think it, you know, if you're doing things the right way in your firehouse and in your home, you won't have to worry about what the other people are thinking around the country, because they'll eventually see it. And if they don't see it, then the folks that you impact will tell those stories about you and they'll see it then. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to lose any sleep over what somebody on the other side of the country thinks about me. I barely even read comments and stuff. You know, when I post stuff out there, you'll see people go off, and I'm not going to argue with them. You know, they're going to think what they think, and it is what it is. You know, but I don't want the folks in my firehouse to think what those people think. I want them to think, you know, that I've impacted them and appreciated me for what I am. I hope my legacy is the people that you know, cohabitated in firehouses with me, have been impacted in a positive way, and take that out and do great things, not just in the fire service, but in their lives.
Love it, man. Next one's coming at you from 35 Ryan Fernandez. He wants to know, how do you deal with the negativity of others when you try to be motivational to others on your crew or at your department?
I mean, that's tough. It's tough to give a canned answer to that, because every situation is obviously majorly different when you're dealing with personalities.
Absolutely.
Generally speaking, I would say just keep chugging, you know, just keep setting the example, keep being positive. And the one thing I'll say, you know, I live in the Bible Belt, you know, and I grew up going to church and stuff, is that, you know, we always said, you know, you can beat somebody over the head with a Bible, but you're not going to change them by beating them over the head with a Bible. And I think that translates into a firehouse very well. You can put too much pressure on them. I believe it's Rob Fisher would do, you know, 10 pounds of pressure 100% of the time. I think that works. It either works or they'll find their way to another crew. I think people want to be around like-minded individuals. You can go to your local high school, walk in the lunchroom at lunchtime. They're not all cohabitating with everybody. They're sitting with their friends, with the people that think the same way they think. Firemen are no different. You know, so if they're in your firehouse and they don't like the way you're doing things and you keep chugging along, they'll eventually find their way somewhere else. And if you're doing things the right way, then I can live with that.
Right.
Now, if you're doing things the wrong way and driving good people off, that's the inverse of it. That's a problem. But if you're doing things the right way and you're setting a good example and you're putting the mission first and you're taking care of your people and you're loving them and you're being nice, like, you know, you're not being an a-hole all the time. You're not being so blunt with them that they don't want to have a conversation with you. You're not beating them over the head with the Bible, but you're living out that example. And they don't like it, and they find their way somewhere else. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Right on. Right on. But the key comes back to doing the right thing. And how clear is your lens on the fact that it's the right thing?
Yeah, I mean, that self-awareness is tough.
And, oh, it's tough.
Honestly, that was probably like back to that training day, those training days, man. It took me 3 or 4 years to become aware. And it was from some folks having hard conversations with me. I took a class in Washington. It was a class on when to have a hard conversation. Some folks had hard conversations with me, and some of them, they weren't even peers necessarily. You know, some of them outranked me. Some of them were peers. Some of them were recruits, rookies that were brave enough to say, hey, Cat, man, you know, you've been a little rough on this. And me eventually listening and starting to look in the mirror and realizing, like, oh my God, you know, they don't like me.
Right.
And listen, I think at the core of every human being, no matter how hard they are, no matter what their demeanor is, no matter what their exterior is, everybody wants to be liked on some level. It feels good. It's that dopamine hit, you know, when somebody likes you and appreciates you. And when I started feeling that a little bit more, I was like, oh, this is a lot easier than when I was just hard all the time. But back to Ryan's question, I think he works. So it was Ryan's question. It's just setting an example. You know, I think that is at the core of, I don't care what your leadership mission is. If you're not going to set the example, you're going to lose. You're going to lose every time. You might not lose immediately, but you're going to eventually lose. Because those folks are watching you. Like you said, their BS detector is going off.
Different.
I can talk on this podcast tonight, and I'm sure there's guys from my crew listening. If I say a bunch of BS, I'm not living out in my firehouse.
They're gonna
know, you know. Or if I say something here, and 6 months from now, I slip up and I fall off the wagon, and I just come in and I'm just a turd every day. Well, you know, I'm gonna lose that influence on them.
And you opened up with saying, hey, when you're talking about negativity in the firehouse, it's a nuanced question because there's so many circumstances that can play into it. But as far as a broad brush painting of the best way to handle it, focus on what you can control and focus your effort, you know, without getting into the weeds of each individual's circumstance and politics involved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Focus on what you can control.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You can control how you treat each other. You can control your effort. There's that the famous meme. I guess I don't know if you call it a meme. It was the 10 things that take zero talent.
Yeah.
It floated around. I don't remember what the whole list was.
No, it comes up in cycles. Yeah.
It was like effort. And there's controllables that it doesn't matter what your salary is. It doesn't matter what your political landscape is. It doesn't matter who your fire chief is. When you come to that firehouse. And look, here's, I work in a department of 40 stations. My fire chief is not in my firehouse. So there ain't but so much I can blame him for.
Right.
You know, and we love to blame up the chain, and sometimes it's warranted. I'm not saying they're all blameless, but there's a whole lot that we can control in our firehouses with the way we treat each other, the way we talk about each other, the effort that we give to each other, the work that we put in together, the sweat that we share. All that stuff's controllable. And my fire chief ain't got nothing to do with any of that. He doesn't control it up or down, good or bad. That's completely up to me and the folks I live with every third day. So if we focus on that, man, we focus on keeping our bubble good. Life is so much easier. It's so much easier to digest. It's so much easier to get up and go to work every third day when you know you're going into a bubble that's pretty good.
Mood, and how easy is to lose sight of that, man?
Oh, it's so easy. And look, I'm not immune to it either.
Right.
I can bitch and moan with the best of them. I can get sucked into that negativity trap. It happens on a regular basis. The older I get, I'm getting a little better about like realizing it, taking a step back, detaching from it a little bit, and getting back on track. But no, I don't think very many people are immune to it.
No, it's insidious, man. It'll absolutely wrap its tentacles around you, and you won't even realize that you're sinking in, man. But yes, Mark Alone says, "Hell yes! How can anyone not love this dude? So glad you got Dozier on the scrap with the fist bump."
He's a good dude.
100%. Yeah, Mark's one of the best. In fact, he's coming on. We got to get him rescheduled because I had to move. But yeah, he's coming back. Brad K wants to know, without a doubt, you've instilled a great culture in your firehouse. Do you think it's more difficult to change the culture of the firefighters under you or your fire office?
I mean, point blank, I think that probably the hardest thing about leadership, more so than even leading up the chain, is leading peers. I think leading peers at the company officer level is probably one of the hardest things about the fire service that I've come across personally. I do think it's easier to lead firemen. And I only mean that because, you know, at least when you have rank, and it's not that you lean on it, but that formal leadership is there. That formal rank is there. You have a voice with them. Whether they want to listen to you or not, at least initially, you have a voice with them. They work for you. And yeah, hopefully you get to a point where you look at each other and say, "Hey, we work together. We work with each other. I don't work for you. You don't work for me." But at the peer level, that doesn't exist.
Right.
I talked to another captain who a lot of times, I'm a younger guy, man. I just turned 38 years old, and I made captain at like 26, 27 years old. I was the youngest captain in the department. So every other peer that I ran across, and I was in a training division, you know, at 27 years old, I'm a training officer. And we're doing company burns. And every single boss that comes to these company burns that's a peer of mine are all older than me and have more experience in our fire department than I do. That's not easy because there is no inherent respect there. You have to earn every bit of that. Probably the biggest thing, look, like I said, we're going to keep it simple. It's right back to leading by example. It goes right back to leading by example, man. It goes by leading by example and not trashing them if they're not doing things the way you want to do them, not bashing their name across the department, trying your best to stay out of the rumor mill and the gossip train of spreading the bad word about this boss that's a peer of yours. And just every time you have a chance to impact them, being deliberate about how you impact them. And you know, we had a fireman on that I got hired with named Mitch Haney. He passed away on a motorcycle crash. I think it was in 2014 or 15. And I was a training officer at the time. I had a probie call me. He was out of recruit school. He was a probie, and he called me And this guy was just a fireman that passed away. He was a senior fireman, but he had no rank. And I didn't know the Proby even knew him. And they had worked a shift together shortly before he passed away. One shift together. And this kid calls me because I don't know why he called me, because this was back in my days where I wasn't that approachable. I don't know if he was with a bad boss or why he felt this particular person felt comfortable calling me. But he called me kind of venting about some stuff, and he was struggling with the guy dying. And he talked about how impactful that one shift that he spent with him. And it was like a light bulb went off for me.
Wow.
Like, oh my God, you know, one shift, one tour, one encounter, how impactful you can be. So when you're doing peers who a lot of times they're not in your firehouse, you know, I do have another officer in my firehouse. We're a dual piece house. So I have a ladder boss there. Well, that side of things is a little easier because that's no different. We're living together. He's seeing me every day. He's seeing the good and the bad. When we're dealing with these peer officers that we're only seeing on calls, or we're only seeing at multi-company trainings, we're only seeing at live burns, we're only seeing it in service, you got to be deliberate with your interactions with them. You got to be deliberate with it, and don't waste the opportunity you have to impact them. And when you have that opportunity, don't beat them over the head with the Bible. You know, just talk to them, and if they're doing good things, tell them, "Hey, man, I saw, you know, hey, that fire we ran last week. Got you and your guys, I can tell you guys been training, y'all been kicking butt. That's great." And the more that you give them, the more opportunity you're going to have the hard conversation with them. Because that hard conversation realistically is only hard if there's no relationship there.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I love what you said. Do not underestimate the power of one shift.
Oh my God, man. It's one of the biggest things I talk about when I do my Winning Firehouse class. One of my favorite stories I get to tell is of that guy. And like, just don't underestimate the impact you can have on somebody in a single encounter. You can change somebody's life. And I think that kid's life got changed that night, that one tour. His career trajectory definitely got impacted. But you can change somebody's life in a single encounter. And most of us, if we thought hard enough, can probably think of several individuals that impacted us that we probably didn't spend a ton of time with.
Yeah.
That impacted us and changed our life, changed our career, put us on the right track. And it might've been from a hard conversation. It might've been just from a like, "Hey man, you're doing a good job. Keep doing what you're doing."
Wow. No, that's powerful. And as you sit there, my gears are turning going, "Holy shit. He's dead on." Brian Turner, what are some core values you look for when you're seeking a new member for your house?
That's my battalion chief. One of my best. He was a peer. He was a captain next door at a neighboring station, and I promoted up. We got lucky enough to keep him. A good dude. I've known him for a long time. And probably number one, I struggle. I work at the busiest firehouse in my department.
Okay.
And it's been the busiest firehouse in my department for the whole 18 years I've been there. How long before that, I have no clue. I'm super busy. We, you know, I said we're not job town, but we get our fair share of like first in work, first due work. It's a very diverse community we work in, from high income stuff to low income stuff. It also can be kind of a beat down. You know, we ran close to 7,000 calls last year out of that firehouse. I got an ambulance there. We do fire and EMS, and that ambulance is rough. It's a rough assignment. And there's a ton of good that comes with it, but there's a lot of bad that comes with it.
Right on.
And I got frustrated early on when I was recruiting people. I had a couple of vacancies early on, and I hit some home runs early and got some good young guys in there that ended up being great. And several of them are lieutenants now. But I also kind of got my heart broke a few times, you know, when I was asking guys and they're like, "Man, I'm not trying to go get beat down," you know, and they turn me down. And I say sometimes that I don't recruit to my firehouse, and it's something that I kind of stand by pretty firmly. I'm not going to get in my department. Everybody knows, I think, pretty well what my reputation is at this point, what my crew's reputation, what that firehouse's reputation is. They know it's busy. They know what's going to go on when they get there. Probably my number one thing I'm looking for is somebody that just simply wants to be there. Mm. I don't want to have to sell you on wanting to be here.
Right.
If you want to be here, we'll figure all the rest out. We'll figure it out when you get here. We'll figure it out. you know. And then probably number two is just don't be a douchebag. That seems so easy to say. But probably one, a good friend of mine, a lieutenant, he retired off our job, Carl Meyer. He was an NYPD cop, and he had a saying. He used to tell me, he said, you know, you can be the Babe Ruth of firefighting, and if you're a douchebag, I don't want you at my firehouse. Yeah. So you want to be here? Well, if you want to be here, the training stuff's going to be easy. You're going to pick that stuff up because you want to do it. And then you're just a good human being. And if I can take those two things and plug it in, man, we'll teach y'all the rest of it. You know, you're going to get exposures. We're going to run calls. You're going to get experience. You're going to get to go to some fires eventually. I mean, you might have a dry spell, but you're going to go to some fires. You're going to cut some cars. You're going to run a ton of medical calls and talk to people and deal with the public and help people. And you'll get experience. Just don't be a douchebag and want to be here.
That's pretty simple, brother. That's a beautiful formula for success. Mark Alone has a question for you. He says, Horry is huge and runs both fire and EMS. And you touched on just how busy that box is. He asked, can you speak to the challenges and the misconceptions about how that impacts culture in your experience?
Man, I'm probably going to hurt some feelings here. That's the only fire service I know.
You
know,
I just want to say this right out the gate. I love when when a guest leads off with that. So go ahead.
Yes, I know probably what I'm going to say. There's going to be some folks in that don't agree with. There's probably some folks in my firehouse that don't agree with what I'm going to say. And I did the volunteer side of things. We didn't have ambulances. It was just, you know, first responder, normal volunteer fire service. Other than that, my entire exposure to the fire department is Horry County Fire Rescue. We do, like anybody else, you know, 80, 85% EMS. We have 27 staffed ambulances. Almost every firehouse has a staffed ambulance in it. I think our second, my ambulance ran 4,500 calls last year. I mean, they get hammered.
They get jobs. Yeah, they work.
You know, they're busy. It has been my experience, and I know this is not true everywhere, but it's been my experience that EMS does not negatively impact the fire service as much as a lot of people try to make it out to be.
Hmm.
And I believe personally that it's kind of a cop out to say that I'm not the fireman I could be because of EMS, because it's been my experience in my department, the best firemen are also the best EMTs and paramedics. The best EMTs and paramedics are also the best firemen. And it's for one reason, because they give a shit, because they care. So the ones that put the work in to be good firemen, they're just intuitively, they're the best EMTs because they want to help people. They want to take care of people. And at some point they realize, like, hey, I should probably be pretty good at these skills because it's going to help me help people. Well, on the fire side, what's the difference? I don't see a difference. Now, I do know, look, we were doing fire and EMS when I hired, so I don't know any different. I didn't see it go from fire to both. And maybe there was a negative impact. But my experience has been that it's a kind of a cop-out answer. It was one of your strap guests. I don't remember who it was. I'm pretty sure it was an FDNY guy. It might have been Mike Dugan. But I heard one of them say one time, and it may have been a different podcast, that if you don't like doing EMS, then all you're simply saying is you don't like helping people. And look, I don't ride an ambulance, man. You know, would it make life easier if Horry County government came down tomorrow and said, hey, you guys are just going to do fire department stuff now. Like, you're not, we're going to bid these ambulances out or whatever. And that's going to be the one less headache you got to deal with from now. And you're going to come to work and all you're going to worry about is running fires. Yeah. I mean, we'd probably get pretty good at what we're doing. But that's not the environment we're in. So there's no need to complain about it. You know, there's zero need to complain about it. It's not going away. If anything, in most departments, if it's not there already, it's coming. So you may as well just get ready for it. And I understand some people probably don't agree with that because their experiences have been different than mine.
Sure.
But my experience has been, you know, I could name off the five best firemen in my firehouse, and there's a good chance they're also probably the five best EMTs.
Phenomenal medics, yeah, right on. And Dan Bender chiming in and said that was Lasky. So I'm not sure. That sounds so familiar to me. And so I think it was a scrap, and I'll take Dan Bender's word for it because his memory.
I remember hearing it, but there's 200 or 200, you know, however many.
His memory's way better than mine, so we'll take his word for it. Lasky said it. It sounds like Lasky. And that makes sense. Absolutely. Where are we at? What is the biggest challenge you foresee? This comes from Josh Jackson. What is the biggest challenge you foresee in the company officer role? There are a lot of questions coming at you, my brother.
You know, and I got to preface this with this is not a generational problem. I don't think I'm not a fan of blaming generations. And the reason I say that, I'm 38 years old. I'm not that old. I mean, I think I'm a millennial, you know, hypothetically. I don't know that I act that way, but I think I'm a millennial. And I'm telling you right now, man, I got some young guys in my firehouse that are young. You know, born post 9/11 young,
right?
That are absolute killers,
right on.
So to just go blame generations, I'm not a fan of. However, you know, what I'm seeing is that as I get older, that's something I'm going to have to adapt to because these kids are growing up differently. Their upbringings are different than what my upbringing was. Their family values are different sometimes than what my family values were. So I foresee me having to adapt to some of that.
Right on. No, that's beautiful.
Now, having said that, one thing I believe and I really hate hearing company officers especially, but even chiefs, depending on the situation, I hate hearing people say that I didn't sign up to raise them. I think it's the exact opposite, man. You signed up to raise them.
Yes.
And it's not that I'm a dad figure to them. Maybe I'm a big brother to them, whatever. But you can't blame somebody for who raised them. That's one thing. It's a core belief of mine. Like out in the world, not just in the fire service. I can't blame somebody for who raised them and what their life experiences were when they were a child. So when they walk into my firehouse and they don't know how to clean a toilet, they don't know how to mop, they don't know how to run a saw. That's the obvious one. Oh, you didn't, you know, it's new skills. You didn't know how to run a saw or tinker on a small engine. Well, it's mine and our, like, my crew's obligation. And they know this up front. Like they're clear about this. It's our obligation to teach them.
Hell yeah.
You know, and you can call that raising them if you want to, but it's no different. If they walk into my firehouse and they don't have just common life skills of like walking up and introducing themselves and shaking your hand, and they legitimately just don't know any better sometimes, then because it's not natural, especially today. These kids are growing up with cell phones in their hands. I didn't grow up with a cell phone in my hand,
right?
You know, I had to learn how to communicate, and I don't even know if I'm that good at it, but I had to learn how to communicate face to face. Some of these kids don't know how to do that stuff. You got to teach them, you got to get them out of their comfort zone and teach them. And I think you do that by loving on them.
Dude, I love it, dude. You're preaching my language. And here's the deal. You said it. I didn't sign up to raise them. Anybody who says that, man, here's the deal. If they come in and they're hired into your, they are sworn into your service, be it volunteer, career, whatever, and they don't know how to do it and you're in charge, you are responsible for them because you have that rank, that bugle, whatever. You signed up to raise them. Plain and simple.
Yeah. And look, and here's the other thing. You know, when they walk into your firehouse, man, they're not the fire chief's problem anymore. And maybe, you know what? Look here. Maybe they shouldn't have got hired. What you going to do about it?
Right on.
You know, so quit blaming everybody else. Pull them in. You know, we got to quit eating them while they're young. You know, we got to quit running them off just because maybe you don't want to put the time and effort into them to I don't want to say fix them, but to teach them.
Yeah.
And look, everybody's not cut out for this, man. I'm not here to like, I'm not, it's not a fairy tale. I'm not saying like you're going to fit, you know.
Just solid point.
Hey, pull them in and love them and everything will be okay. No, some of them don't need to be there. But you can't run them off if you didn't put the effort in. You just can't. I can't consciously do that. I wouldn't be able to sleep. That's something I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So put the effort in, man. Teach them. Show them the way. I'm blessed, so blessed right now because I got these guys in my firehouse that are living it, you know. So when we get a probie, and we're getting a probie here soon, and I won't have to have a lot of those hard conversations with them. because those guys are. Those guys that you know, have been with me for 3, 4, 5 years now are going to have those conversations. And I know they're living life the right way. But, yeah, I don't buy into that. We didn't sign up to raise them, man. I see people post that on Facebook. I see it. And look, I'm not bashing the older generation. You know what they're doing? They're just repeating what they were told. I mean, that's all it is. They were probably saying that 100 years ago.
No, I always like to say, man, there was a generation, you know, in 19, whatever, 20 was saying, these young kids coming in, they can't do, you know, whatever. They're worthless. And that turned out to be what they call the greatest generation.
Yeah, the greatest generation got ripped by
the people before them, the millennials before them, or the centennials before them, whatever they were called at the time. No, without a doubt, man. Some of the people, yeah, there we go. Dude, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I got more questions coming at you. How you doing? How you feeling? How's your energy?
Good.
Jacob Williamson wants to know, in your training days, did you deal with people coming through the academy that did not perform or had poor character? How did you deal with that?
A little bit. Not a ton. I probably dealt with more non-performers from a physical perspective. Than I did the type of person they were.
Sure.
And look, here's the thing. I wasn't living with them either. And a lot of stuff gets exposed whenever you live with somebody for 24 hours that doesn't get exposed for 8 hours in a classroom or on a drill ground. So I didn't deal with a ton of that when I was in training, a little bit here and there. And I joke sometimes, you know, because, you know, human resources gets ripped constantly.
Right.
Some of it's deserving. The handful of times I dealt with them when I was in training, they had my back, and maybe it was because I had my documentation squared away and I had made good decisions. But they had my back. They didn't hang me out to dry. Now, did I deal with non-performers from a physical perspective? Yeah. And I think probably almost all fire departments probably deal with that on some level nowadays, because I'm going to be straight up, man. And this is not a shot at my fire department. This is a shot at the fire service, I guess. Our physical standards to get on the job, probably in almost any department, is not where it needs to be. Now, I'm not saying there's some outliers. I'm sure there are some outliers that just hire nothing but studs because they have a physical standard to get on the job. But most places, simply put, we're hiring people that physically wouldn't have gotten hired 30 years ago. And you know, that's a big problem that's probably gonna have to be addressed at some point in time in the future, because you know, we're hammering line of duty deaths, obviously, which is good. I don't think anybody, in my opinion, nobody should ever sign up to die on the job.
Right on.
But I mean, the numbers are there. We're not dying on the fire ground. We are, but we're not. You know, the bulk of the numbers is not on the fire ground.
Right.
The numbers are inflated, and look, are there folks that are in fantastic physical condition to have a medical emergency, and that stuff's going to happen? Like, we forget sometimes that we're human beings, and human beings perish. Healthy ones, young ones, it happens. So some of that stuff's going to happen. But do we also lose folks that physically aren't ready to do the job currently, and maybe weren't even when they got on the job? Yeah, and that's something we probably could prevent. On some level.
No, slipping of the standard is without a doubt across the board. And there are places that actually hold the standard. And like you said, yes, it's absolutely a real, real, very real deal.
Yes, I dealt with more of that. I didn't deal. And I think it's just because, look, you know, I had them eight or 9 hours a day. And for the most part, they were just listening to me or doing what I was saying. So a lot of that stuff didn't come out. So I didn't have to deal with it a ton when I was in that training environment.
All right. This next one's coming at you from Alex Valbuena. He says, this is for both of you. What would you tell a new member of your fire department or a new member of the fire service to make a significant impact on their career?
I can probably segue into my expectations. And I know Chief Thompson, he's hammering the mission statement stuff. And there's other guys out there really hammering that simple mission statement. I think we way overcomplicate the job a lot of times. And the expectations I have for my crew is very simple. And there's three main expectations, and they're so simple we really don't ever have to talk about them. It's help people, be really nice to people, and kill fire. It's just that simple. And you can plug in whatever you want to plug in to kill fire. You know, you can plug in, do good searches. You can plug in, be the best vent man on the roof you could possibly be, whatever your role is.
I love the power of kill fire, though. I really do.
It's just as simple as
help. That's powerful.
Help people, be really nice, and kill fire. And I have found, and look, those are the same expectations I have myself. So when I'm in a situation in public, on a medical call, at the grocery store, riding down the road in traffic, when somebody blows the horn, cuts us off, or on the fire ground, and I get faced with a situation where I'm hesitating because I don't know what the right decision is, the right decision almost 100% of the time is in one of those three expectations. And when we just default to those three things, help people, be really nice, kill fire, it almost always fixes itself, like almost immediately a lot of times. So I think it's just that simple. And the problem is, and Chief Thompson, he's way more eloquent about putting this stuff than I am. You know, we have these mission statements that are 2, 3, 4 paragraphs long. And when I get, and you know, I took a class with Chief Jason Hovelman. Our department brought him in, I think, last year.
I love that dude.
And he didn't say it quite that same way. He didn't say it quite the same way as Chief Thompson. But he was hitting on mission statements and saying, like, look, man, a mission statement should be a framework to make decisions. Well, I can't lay a two or three paragraph mission statement on top of a problem and find my answer in there, because I may not have 20 minutes to think about it to figure out what the right answer is. But I can lay help people over almost any problem and say, like, look, the answer is inside this frame. And if it's outside of this frame, I'm not doing it. And yeah, the right answer might be out there occasionally, but almost all the time the right answer is inside that frame. So, you know, if I'm talking to a new guy, I don't want him thinking about 100 different things when he gets faced with a hard decision. All I want him thinking about is help people, be really nice, kill fire. And the answer is in there 99.999% of the time.
I love it, brother, man. I love it. Yeah, absolutely. Timestamp. I got like a list running. Thank you. Yeah, Rob Ramirez said timestamp. There's been a few timestamps tonight, a few max points without a doubt. And I think Jason Hovelman's, if I can quote him right, is take care of people. You know, I think that's his wording. That's his wording.
Mission statement at his fire department. Yeah. We take care of people.
We take care of people. And dude, like you said, man. All right. I love this question. It comes from Billy Floyd. What would be the one piece of advice Captain Michael Dozier would provide new hire firefighter Michael Dozier if you had the chance to speak to your younger self?
Go to the busy firehouse. Go to the busy firehouse. I came up in my department. We have a very diverse just area. It's 1,200 square miles. You know, we hit 80,000 runs this past year. We have ambulances. We also have busy firehouses like where I work. We also have some very slow firehouses. We have some very rural areas, and I spent a good bit of my career as a fireman. The last handful of years I was a fireman, I was in a little bit busier environment, but I spent a lot of time on the rural side because that's where I grew up. I grew up out in the rural part of our county. And, 5 years ago, in about 2 weeks, 5 years ago, I got transferred to the house I'm at now, and it has been absolutely the best thing I've ever done in my career. Now, I don't really know why I didn't go to the busy house early on, and I'm not sure. Maybe there was some intimidation there. Maybe there was some the imposter syndrome thing, I know. Right. Fires and I get a decent reputation, but like, am I going to go there and get exposed? I didn't want to be vulnerable, which is none of that's good stuff. But for whatever reason, I didn't go. And if I had to do it over again, I'd have told. And if I ever have one of my kids get on the job, I'll tell them this: go somewhere and get exposed. Go to that busy firehouse and just get your mess kicked in every day, and learn the job and get that exposure, go to the fires, go to the medical calls, do all that stuff that sometimes you're not getting to do every day in the slower firehouses. And I know some departments aren't situated like that. You know, they have 3 or 4 stations and they all run a similar call volume, but ours isn't like that. I mean, we got stations that do 7,000 calls and stations that do 300, 400 calls. And I spent a lot of time in those, 700, 800, 900 call firehouses. And if I had to do it over again, I'd have went to the busy firehouse early on.
Right on, bro. I love that advice, man. And that is, man, please, 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 if you are young and in the fire service and you have the option,
yeah,
take advantage. Take advantage. You will not regret it later in your career. I love it, man, which takes me to one of my favorite questions I ask because I love books. Everybody who knows me knows I love reading, and I love talking to readers. And we've already talked about Dandridge Malone and
Small Unit Leadership.
Thank you. Yes. But absolutely. No, there was another one you referenced in there, Mission Men and Me.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the other one. But no, irregardless, or regardless for Brett Coclasure, if he's listening, books that you think firefighters should be reading.
I mean, obviously there's some obvious ones, you know, Extreme Ownership, Jocko and Leif Babbitt Mandate. That probably changed my life when I read that book for the first time, but I'm sure that's been referenced a ton of times. Some books, I don't know if they've been referenced or not, some of them. Chop Wood, Carry Water by Josh Metcalf. Probably one of the best books I've read. It's a quick read, man. I think I read it in a day or a day and a half or something. I'm not a fast reader. But it's a book about grit and about falling in love with the process. And, basically this guy goes and he's training to be a samurai. And it's almost like the Karate Kid thing, the whole wax on, wax off. And
right.
He thinks his master's having him do all this menial tasks. And every day he's starting the day and he's chopping wood and carrying water. And he learns at the end that, getting good at those basic stuff is why he ends up being a good samurai. So Chop Wood, Carry Water. Another one, I know It's Your Ship. I think you've talked about It's Your Ship.
I love it. Abershoff might be one of the most influential people that I've never met.
I just read it and listened to it like in the last year. And oh my God, man, that from start to finish, it was nothing but bombs, you know, stuff that was hitting home for fire service. Probably another one, Hal Moore on Leadership. Now more on leadership. I know everybody reads, We Were Soldiers, and then they think about him from that. But he has a book that's just on leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as much of him telling a story, but telling stories to support different leadership components. That's really good. And then the last one, probably the book that changed my life the most, was a 40-day devotional that I did probably 10 years ago called Act Like Men. By James McDonald. And that was the book that, and it was a 40-day Bible devotional.
Okay.
And I did it probably 10, maybe more than 10 years ago. And it really framed the standard that we should be living our life to in a way that I had not thought about. And the gist of the book basically is like, what standard are you judging yourself to? Are you judging yourself to your neighbor's standard and saying like, hey, I'm doing a good job just because I'm doing better than he is?
Right.
When he may be a slug, he might be a mutt, and you might not realize that you may also be a mutt, but you're just doing a little bit better than he is. So you feel good about yourself.
Right.
Having that biblical standard of what it is to be a man. On the job, in your home, in the firehouse. But yeah, Act Like Men. I've done several devotionals. I try to do one every couple of years, like a 40-day devotional. I probably should do them more often, but I try to do one every few years, and that is by far the best one I've ever done.
Nice. I love hearing that, brother. Beautiful. Which officially takes us to one of my favorite parts of the scrap. It is the 5 questions for firefighters. It's been around for quite some time. Not quite the entirety, because originally we started with 1 question. Then it turned into the 5 questions. And now we are currently on questions 5Q3 version 3.3. So my question for you, first of all, is are you ready for the 5 questions for firefighters?
Yeah, let's do it.
The questions are the answers are 100% your opinion. There is no right or wrong. The points are arbitrary. They're assigned by me with the help of the studio audience. And I want you to smash the like, smash the heart, smash whatever you can smash if you are watching live as he answers if you think it needs max points, if you like the answer, because that will help me out. Also, you can also type max points 100% or love it. Those are the absolute keywords. Here we go. Number one. What is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
This is probably the hardest one for me. And I don't know if what I'm going to say is a skill. But I do think it's something that everybody doesn't show every day. A love of your people and framing who your people are. So when I say love your people, I don't mean, and this is a core component of my classes, a core component of stuff I post on Facebook and Instagram, all that. When I say love your people, I don't just mean your crew, because that's the easy answer. Like, love the people that, you know, take care of them. That's easy. What I mean is, like, love your family, be present with them, put them first, love the people in your firehouse, and love your community. And when you frame stuff in love, and we didn't get to this, but it just actually works out perfectly. Talking about mission statements, I have just three simple expectations. I also have a personal mission statement. And my personal mission statement is to do things because I love people. So when I get faced with a hard decision at home, with my kids, with my wife, when I get faced with a hard decision at the firehouse, when I get faced with a hard decision in traffic, when somebody pulls out in front of me, I frame that hard decision with, am I doing this because I love them and because I want what's best for them? And it brings everything into focus for me and makes the decision for me. So when I figured that out, and it took me several years of being on the job, because I told you I was selfish, and you can't love someone to be selfish. They just don't match. They don't fit together. But when I realized that, hey, I need to love these people and I need to put them first and all that, it made life so much easier for me on the job.
Dude, hey, max point, easy max points. This is the killer part. Thank you, everybody, for smashing the buttons, because that made it the easiest. It just flew. It just flew. Just hearts and hundreds. Hearts, thumbs ups, and hundreds flying by, which made it one of the easiest things to ever score. So thank you, audience. You killed it. And only thing that killed it more was your answer to the question, Michael. So thank you. Absolutely loved that interaction. Number two, I love this question. It might be my... I don't know if it's my favorite question, because number five is probably my favorite question, but this is there. This is fighting for it. It's job town. It's time. You're in route. You're responding. Of course, the scene from Backdraft. McCaffrey's jumping on the rig. They're slapping that cassette into the cassette deck. What song are you playing in route?
Man, I'm going to be honest, Corey. When I first heard you add this question, I thought, when I first heard you say it, I was like, man, this is going to be dumb. Yeah. As I've listened to, I don't know how many podcasts or how many episodes you've done with
it's around 40 or 45. There's 45 songs now on the playlist.
That's I look forward to hearing it now. And when I first thought about it, I was thinking Rage Against the Machine. Well, I'm about that, but I've heard several already say that. I've heard several say that. Pantera, Walk. Popped in my head. I was wanting that one. But I grew up in the South, and it probably not going to go the direction a lot of people think. The guys that work with me are going to completely understand this. They're probably know what answer's coming. I grew up in the South. Everybody hears my accent. They're thinking country music, Southern rock, blah, blah. I grew up in a very diverse community. You know, the high school I went to, you know, there was no minority. I mean,
I'm just gonna say I love the buildup already. I'm anxious.
We were just jumbled up in there together, you know. So I got exposed to a lot of different backgrounds and things as a kid. You know, my mom listened to R&B and rap, and you know, my dad listened to Southern rock and a little bit of metal and stuff. And I got exposed to a ton of stuff. And the guys, and my wife hates it because every time she gets in the truck, there's a different genre of music on.
Okay.
The genre I listen to when I work out is rap, man, and old school stuff, and a big Southern hip hop kind of influence on my life when I was growing up, the kids I hung out with and stuff like that. I'm going to go Crime Mob, which is an Atlanta group, Nuck If You Buck. And I don't know if anybody else is going to give you that answer.
Definitely original.
I'm going to be straight up, man. For one reason, when I hear that thing, I want to fight. You know, I'm ready to fight. So it gets me fired up. You know, like I can't listen to that when I'm in traffic, or I'll be got in trouble, you know. But going to a fire, I think I would throw that on. So the boys at work, that makes it into playlist, and we're working out pretty regular, so they're probably used to it. But. Yeah,
no. Here's the deal. It's now gonna be in the playlist. It's gonna be there's a Spotify playlist, and there is, even for the old school people, there's a Pandora playlist. So it will be added to the playlist. Nuck If You Buck. And who'd you say it was? Crime Mob?
Crime Mob.
Crime Mob.
Crime Mob. little scrappy.
We'll see. We'll have to pull it up, man. And it's getting the hearts and it's getting the 100s. I absolutely love it. Thank you, audience. That makes it so easy to say this next part, which is max points for Nuck If You Buck. All right. Number three, what is your favorite fire service tradition?
I tell you what, and I know everybody always says kitchen table and all that. And it kind of is the kitchen table, but I'm going to add a little something to it.
Hey, I'll just interrupt you real quick. Just for reference for you and everybody else. I wrestled with this question so much because the Firehouse Kitchen Table wins so many times. And I've qualified it and I've removed it and I put it back in. But bottom line is this. All I care about is what you think the tradition is and why. Yeah. So I want to be clear. The why is the important part. So go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yes, yeah,
so
I'm going to say the kitchen table or the front bumper, the couch in the bay, whatever. At 2 o'clock in the morning when almost everybody's going to bed and there's just you and one other guy there and the gloves come off and it gets raw and you really and truly get to know each other. And I've had so many conversations like that with folks, both when I was a fireman and now that I'm a captain with firemen or with the lieutenant on my shift or the guy that filled in for overtime. And I'm like, I'm watching him and he's there on a detail and I see that he's waiting until I go to bed to go to bed. And then we have that raw conversation. That is what I love. Hmm. That one, you know, and look, I love the kitchen table at shift change with coffee. I love that. I love the kitchen table after dinner when everybody's taking shots at each other and picking on, you know, this guy's got big ears and this one's got a big head. I love that, but I love that kitchen table or that picnic table out on the pad or that front bumper at two or 3 o'clock in the morning or like, hey, we run minimum, you know, low staffing pretty regular on the way back from a call at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, which is you and your driver. And you're talking about just something random.
Yes. Yes.
And you end up down a rabbit hole.
Oh yeah.
I tell people when I'm teaching, like 90% of what I'm teaching about is rabbit holes that I was down at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right on.
So that's probably my favorite firehouse tradition.
When the bed is calling and your eyes are tired, but the conversation is way better than even sleep.
Oh, yeah. When you wake up the next morning, you're like, I should have went to bed earlier.
Yeah, I should have gone to bed 4 hours before. Yes, without a doubt, man. No doubt. And Ken Norton said, I thought purple rain for sure. Holy crap, dude. You talk about some purple rain. All right. Yeah,
that's my guy.
Dude. Yeah. Ken Norton or Prince? I just want to know.
You know, me and Ken Norton, we had some moments with Prince back in the day in a firehouse.
I'm telling you, the halftime show when Prince played in the rain and he played Purple Rain, holy crap. Okay, anyway, that's one of the greatest halftime shows of all time. Number four, you're rocking it, by the way. Max points, 3 for 3. And that's not me. That is 100% the smashing it, man. On the clock. This is the clock.
Yep.
This is the Mount Rushmore question. You get 1 minute to put and describe who the four people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service, and go.
One, Tom Brennan. I grew up reading Random Thoughts. He was still writing it whenever I first subscribed to Fire Engineering, and I had a captain give me the book on Random Thoughts after he passed away. Changed my life. John Norman, legend. Probably the first tactics book or just fire department book I ever got was Handbook of Tactics, you know, and I still have it. It's on the shelf behind me. Next one, Rodney Hardy, Lawrence Volunteer Fire Department. He's assistant chief. He impacted me so many different ways in my marriage, being a dad, all that stuff. He passed away a medical line of duty death in 2013. Nobody knows him, but the local guys, but he was fantastic.
Right.
And then I'm going to throw the South Carolina Fire Service a bone here. Carter Jones, retired chief from Clarendon County. Is an absolute legend in the fire service in South Carolina that people outside of South Carolina most of the time probably don't know who he is. There may be him crossing paths with an instructor or something at some point. Carter Jones, Clarendon County. He's still alive. He's still with us, a historian of the South Carolina Fire Service. He's a legend around here.
Love it. Brennan, Norman, Hardy, Jones.
That's right.
There's the four on the Mount Rushmore for Michael Dozier, which officially takes us to heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Man, I'm an engine guy. I grew up on the engine. I ride, we call it a squad now, but it's a rescue engine. And I've never ridden a truck other than a detail here and there. I got a truck in my firehouse, and we have a pretty good engine truck battle going on most of the time. We talk a lot of junk to each other and all that. So the truck guys are probably gonna like when I say this. I love being on the nozzle. I do. And with our manpower, I occasionally still get to do it. So, you know, it's not as foreign to me as this other part, man. But I think the reason we exist is to pull people out of burning buildings. And I would say to the point that, you know, some of these engine guys aren't gonna like this, you know, that I don't think the truck should be called the support company. I think everybody supports getting the search done. So, like, you could argue, and, you know, depending on what your deployment model is, you got a truck in-house, man. The engine's probably the support crew. So I'm going to go with VES, man. I don't think there's anything cooler that you can do in the fire service than pulling someone out of a building. And effectively, like, if you had not acted, they wouldn't have lived. And, what can compare to that? So I'm going to say VES. The truck guys are going to pick on me about it next shift, but I'm going to say VES.
There you go. And that you got to live with your answer. And there is no wrong answer. It's just your opinion.
Yeah.
I can see the hearts flying up. I can see the engine guys throwing up the no.
I'm sure.
But without a doubt, brother, you absolutely crushed the five questions for firefighters. In your first visit, Derek DuPont said, mic drop, Cap.
He rides the truck by saying that.
Max points. There's a lot of smashing going on. Without a doubt, brother, you absolutely crushed it. And that officially brings scrap number 247 and puts it in the books, brings it to a close. Captain Michael Dozier, thank you for being with us on this evening. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do so?
Probably Facebook or Instagram, the company officer. I mean, I have a personal page on it. You feel free to add me. I'll probably accept it unless you look like a creeper or something. But, you know, Facebook or Instagram, my email is thecompanyofficer.1@gmail.com. So email or just message me on Facebook is probably the easiest way.
Love it, man. Absolutely love it. Please, please, please reach out to him. Phenomenal classes that he teaches. Go to firehousevigilance.com. Vigilantes. We are now officially on Patreon. We are transferred over. We are moving away from Facebook, so you can catch us on Patreon. It's a blast. There's videos every day. We're going to get another forum on the books. I have to get it scheduled, and I really, really need to. Another fireway on the books. Tons of discussion. We are a group of like-minded souls. If you're a vigilante, you are never alone. Go become one today. The Scrap After Party, which is something the vigilantes are a part of. Michael Dozier has agreed to show up in the after party and be roasted for his performance on the Scrap this evening, which is a threat we always levy and never deliver on. So that's just the joke that keeps on giving. Next week, coming up on the Scrap, let me pull up the list. Next week, it is Dennis Laguerre. He might be talking about that nozzle he's been talking about. There's a lot of talk around it, but not just that, application of water, everything else, not just the nozzle, but so, I mean, anytime you talk to Dennis, you're going to get hydraulics. I mean, plain and simple. Following that, Ryan Selleck, Young Officers on Fire. His work on decision-making, his work on decision-making under stress, man, it's going to be a good discussion. And following Ryan Selleck, because Ryan Selleck was the only person who said, I'll do it. I'll go before Kurt. Why not? Because 249 is Ryan Selleck, and then 250 is Kurt. Kurt posted today, how does Kurt talk? It's like, biggest giveaway ever in the history of fire service, basically, on Scrap 250, never before been seen, giving away tons of, okay, that's my Kurt voice. But he's going to be on 250, and we're going to absolutely try our best to crush and break the internet once again. So that's the next three. Following, like, who do you get to follow? Kurt Isaacson. BJ Breacher said, no problem. I'll do it. And so it's going to be amazing. That's what's coming up. All that being said, 2024 is absolutely crushing it. We are in May. I can't believe we're already in May. That blows my mind. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Michael Dozier, for being such an amazing guest.
Thank you.
Vigilantes, Sam has already posted the links. Get into the after party. Dozier will be there. Audience, every one of you, thank you for smashing the button. Thank you for scoring the max points. Thank you most of all for just tuning in and asking killer questions from a phenomenal guest who absolutely crushed your killer questions. Without you, the Scrap would just be me and Michael talking. And that's not near as cool as you guys being here. So I love you. I really do. You make the Scrap magical. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tone stays silent unless it is burning. Everybody, Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.